Broadcasting live from Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn, you're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.com.
Radio Network. I'm Erica Wides, your host. So if you just walk down the streets of Manhattan lately, you're really reminded of how completely our lives have been just totally taken over by mega corporations, from bank branches on every corner to chain stores coming into every vacant storefront that used to be an independent New York style business, you know, to the invasion of the big box retailers that we now have creeping into the city. New York has really become a city that looks like every other city in the U.S. And so even here in what was once the most complex and most diverse city in the world, we can now shop at places like Home Depot and Costco, like the rest of corporate saturated America. And if Walmart has its way, we'll be able to shop at Walmart here soon. And so even though we also have things like the best green market system in the country and we're on the cutting edge of the food movement, we still feel the effects of the corporatization of our food, what we call big food, and the way that they're swallowing up our food system and pooping out foodiness everywhere you turn. And so back sort of late last year when we were all following Occupy Wall Street on TV and in the media, when it was, you know, sort of top story in the news and all eyes were on New York, two New Yorkers, food activist and writer Erica Lotti and writer and nutritionist Kristen Wortman, decided to occupy Wall Street themselves to bring attention to not just how corporate America is controlling our money and our lives and the economy, but also how the food industry, aka big food, controls what we eat and our food system. And just like corporate America is replacing everything real with a manufactured doppelganger, which is what they've done to New York, they're replacing food with a manufactured doppelganger, which you know that I call foodiness, and which is what Let's Get Real is all about. So tonight we have one half of the Occupy Big Food team, Kristen Wortman, in the studio with us. And if you follow the real food movement at all, you've probably read Kristen's work. She's a prolific writer doing the good work of exposing the nasty stuff that corporate America is doing to our food and putting in our food for places like the Huffington Post and Civil Eats and Grist. And she's also come up with a brilliant way to explain why the Sarah Palin chocolate chip cookie crowd defends their corporate kidnappers. We'll be talking about that, about Occupy Big Food and how to snatch our real food back from the jaws of corporate foodiness. So welcome, Kristen Wortman.
Thank you.
To Let's Get Real.
Thanks for having me.
Sure. Thanks for coming out to Bushwick. So, you know, back last fall, we were all most of us were following Occupy Wall Street on TV or listening to it on NPR, things like that, and thinking, well, this is what I was thinking, is that I'm so glad somebody's down there doing something about this. But I can't really be down there right now, because I have to stay home and watch Weeds. You know, it's basically something like that. Well, you guys, you know, probably saw it as an opportunity to get down there, get in front of the cameras in the country and start thinking and talking about how this applies to our food. So how did you and Erica come up with this with Occupy Big Food?
Yeah, I was actually the brainchild of Erica. And I was writing at the time, I wrote an article for the Huffington Post about the food movement and how it really connected to Occupy Wall Street. And I saw that she was planning a rally. She was in the works and I emailed her and we met and we really hit it off and we decided to team up and do this together. And that's how it happened.
Mm-hmm. And what was the goal?
Well, the goal of Occupy Big Food, and still is the goal, is to bring attention to how corporations really control our food system and really dictate what it is Americans eat in this country. Mm-hmm. It's really deeply connected to Occupy Wall Street, because Occupy Wall Street's all about how the corporate entities, banking institutions, deeply influence our political systems. So similarly, all these corporate entities really control our food systems. And I really believe that a healthy food system is really at the root of a healthy democracy. Mm-hmm. And when we have, you know, a handful of corporations controlling what we eat, it's a real threat to our democracy.
Mm-hmm. Like Walmart controlling our food basically from seed to garbage can.
Well, they, yeah, like, and they have 1/4 of all groceries that are bought in this country are bought at Walmart. We also have corporations like Monsanto, mm-hmm. the huge biotech company that controls 95% of sugar beets, 93% of soy, 83% of corn. And these are huge commodity crops. Mm-hmm. So these corporations like Monsanto, they control it from seed to table. They've mm-hmm. actually patented seed. They've patented a life form. Mm-hmm. So that's a really deep and insidious way to control the food system.
Mm-hmm. And it puts those farmers who are forced to use those seeds into a really precarious situation, because if they don't use them, they have no other options. And it's like they're basically shackled to Monsanto for the rest of their farming lives, aren't they?
Right. Yeah. And I'm sure, you know, many of the listeners have heard that there was a court hearing for small farmers who wanted to have protection from the legal system against Monsanto, because as the law exists now, Monsanto can actually sue farmers who do not use their GMO crops at all, but as a result of the way pollination works, you know, the wind blows and crops get pollinated, they've become contaminated with GMO seed. And Monsanto can actually sue those farmers for patent infringement. And the judge ruled that that wasn't something that should deserve to be heard in our courts.
Oh my God.
So Monsanto is bullying these farmers, and it's really aggressive. They're very aggressive, and they have the best lawyers in the world to fight these things.
Right. So, I mean, Monsanto is really sort of the one perfect example of the evil, all-consuming, all-controlling corporate mega.
Yeah, they control, the seed, they control the pesticide, the fertilizer, and then these commodity crops like corn and soy, for example, sugar, are in nearly every process and packaged food. So all the stuff that's on the shelves, you know, is coming through down from Monsanto. Mm-hmm. So they really control the whole entire line.
Wow. That's unbelievable. I mean, I knew that, but even just hearing it again, it's like,
and this is numbers. Why, you know, this is why we need to occupy big food, because like we went through the court system and they didn't do anything for us, you know, and similarly to how Occupy Wall Street, they don't believe that we can keep going through the same sort of lobbying political process because it's failed us. Look where we've ended up. So the food movement, I believe, has failed in a lot of ways as well, because going to lobby and writing petitions and talking to Congress is like really failed.
Yeah.
So Occupy Big Food wants to take matters into our own hands. You know, how can we actually fight against these corporations in a way that's going to be effective? Because the courts aren't proving to be effective.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, obvious to me, the obvious answer to that, how can we, is like, just don't buy any of that stuff. Just eat real food. I mean, that's what this show is all about. You know, don't buy and eat foodiness. Just eat real food. Go to your farmer's market and buy your real food. But, you know, it's funny because Occupy Wall Street was all about, you know, the 1% and the 99%. But I think that 99% of people in America probably don't really pay that much attention to their food. They either don't have time, or they don't have the money, or they're just not that well aware of it, or they've always just sort of bought into this trust in corporations and felt like, well, you know, big companies, General Foods, I trust them, Kraft, you know, Kellogg's, they've been making great products my whole life. And, you know, and it's not just the kind of like McDonald's, Applebee's crowd, it's the Garden Burger protein bar crowd too. I mean, that's what I find so insidious. And we were talking about this before the show, is that these tentacles reach even into those products, you know, and that's really what I talk about when I talk about foodiness, is things like, you know, organic gummy bears, or, you know, the vegan chicken products that you think, oh, they're really good, they're really healthy, you know.
Right.
So, you know, like I said, the answer to me is just don't buy any of that stuff. But how, you know, how can people do this other than that? I mean, how do we make people care? How do we make people want to occupy big food? And do we care if they care?
Yeah, no, I definitely care that they care, because I think if we're going to actually change things, we're going to have the masses of people behind us. We can't just keep having the same, you know, group of people that goes to the farmer's market, you know, reads Michael Pollan, et cetera. Mm-hmm. So what do we
do? The food elite, so-called food elite.
What do we do to get everyone else on board? And that's what Occupy Big Food has really been about, brainstorming ways to get more people to care about their food. And there's no easy answer to that question. I mean, as anyone knows who's been following the food movement, been working on this for 30, 40 years, mm-hmm. it's really a hard issue to... I think something that I've been realizing more and more, though, and I think is a failure of the food movement in a lot of ways, is that we can't just say, you know, what we eat will solve the problem. I really don't think we can just buy our way out of this situation. Mm-hmm. You know, buying healthier foods, buying organic, going to farmers market. I mean, these are all things I do, and I know a lot of people do them, and it's because they want to do it, you know, and they believe in it. But
the personal is political. So in your own tiny way, you're fighting your battle, but it's not enough.
I believe that's true, but I don't think it's enough, mm-hmm. because what I think ends up happening is you just sort of create two food systems where you have the people that can continue to buy these healthy, good foods, and then you have the rest of the Americans who can't afford mm-hmm. to buy it, or they're not educated about it. They don't know how to cook. Right. They don't know how to shop. They don't, you know, all these things. So you have two systems, mm-hmm. and the sort of elite stay on the one side, mm-hmm. and everyone else gets stuck with the rest.
Right.
So I really believe that people who care about this need to address these structural impediments to mm-hmm. making food accessible for everyone. Good mm-hmm. food, you know, and I say food because I don't think that stuff is food, that foodiness.
Yeah.
It needs to be accessible to everyone. So how do we do that? And part of it that I do as a writer is trying to show people that I think that, you know, we've been tricked in a lot of ways by these mm-hmm. advertising agencies, by these food corporations, by these foods masquerading, mm-hmm. you know.
Manufactured doppelgangers.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, and I think you can start to see people coming around to see this more and more. Mm. But I think it's our job to really explain it to people.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, we both have someone in common in Tracy McMillan, who mm-hmm. just, you know, she's been on Heritage before, and her book is just out. Someone just knocked on the window. Her book about, you know, the American way of eating, where she went undercover, worked as a farm worker, worked in Walmart, worked in an Applebee's, just really investigate our food systems mm-hmm. and how our food is produced and how it gets to the table and everything. And now, just today, I guess she's become Rush Limbaugh's new poster child for the liberal elite. And, you know, you were telling me about it before the show. So you want to talk about that a little more?
Yeah. So, I mean, I just was following her tweets right before I came on the show, and she was saying that Rush Limbaugh he read the review of the New York Times of her book, mm-hmm. and he was calling her an authorette, by the way.
So patronizing.
I know. And so basically his whole rant was, you know, who is this woman? She's not a nutritionist. She's actually just a food writer. She's a political scientist because she has her BA in mm-hmm. poli-sci. And this is the new front of the left wing. They want to fight food. They mm-hmm. want to fight food corporations. They don't believe that the private sector should have anything to do mm-hmm. with food. The government should control our food. That's what us crazy liberals want. Mm-hmm. And so he's saying that that's what Tracy McMillan's arguing for, and that he believes that, you know, food justice is the next frontier in terms of what the liberals are going to be fighting against. Mm-hmm. So
he's right.
And he is right.
Good.
I'm glad.
Yeah. Yeah. I know. I think it's great because it's really going to backfire in a way for him. And people are going to say, well, yeah, of course, that's what we're fighting for. And you know, I think it's actually going to work really well in her favor and just cause him to look even worse and lose more advertisers.
Yeah, hopefully. And hopefully we'll just bring more attention, you know, to mainstream Americans, people who listen to Limbaugh, that they'll realize, like, what's going on. Maybe they'll read her book, you know, mm-hmm. read other people who are writing about big food and how it controls us. You know, he clearly doesn't get it, but you know, maybe other people will.
Right. Well, you know, he's in that same school of, you know, Sarah Palin, when she was defending parents' mm-hmm. rights to bring cookies, you know, she used that as her like battle cry. You know, I defend mm-hmm. my rights to bring cookies to my kids' Little League game, or, you know,
right.
You, I, had talked about this as, you know, sort of referring to the Stockholm syndrome to explain, you know, why red state Americans defend big food and fight off attempts to help them improve what they eat. If people are a little rusty on Stockholm syndrome, it's when hostages express empathy and have positive feelings toward their captors,
right.
sometimes to the point of defending them. That was Wikipedia's explanation, which means it must be true.
That's right.
Of course, you know. Yeah. And I said, of course, it's like Patty Hearst, you know. you know, fell in love with her captors. So you applied it as this explanation, you know, for why Sarah Palin's demographic sees attempts to feed real food at school instead of junk food as attempts to control what your kids are eating, you know, when corporate America is controlling what they eat. Anyway, so do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I was trying to sort of figure that out because it's sort of a conundrum. Why would these people be defending children's right to eat food that's making them sick, making them obese? But what I figured out was that I think that, you know, these advertising agencies have really sort of hoodwinked Americans in a lot of ways. And it's not to say that Americans are stupid. These are like huge, they have billions and billions of dollars and they research and they do focus groups. They do everything to figure out what's going to work to get people to buy our products. And what they've done is they've imbued these products, you know, packaged foods, Big Macs, Cokes, all these things with this sense of American authenticity. You know, we're one of you. We're on your side. This is what real Americans eat. And they've been brilliant at it. And they've really done a good job of setting that up as in opposition to what the elites eat, which is this very snob.
Arugula.
Arugula, exactly. So, you know, they've told Americans that, you know, that's not a real American diet and we are making the real American diet.
Right.
And it's also very cheap and affordable for you.
Really
so,
cheap.
You know, it's this sort of really brilliant idea and people really bought into it for a number of reasons. But the whole thing with the Stockholm syndrome is, you know, it's not Americans are actually captive to anyone per se, but they've been tricked into defending these corporations that are actually harming them, that are actually making them and their children sick.
Sick, shortening and, their lives.
And so, you know, I don't know how to, you know, we need to figure out how to get that message across that that's really what's going on. So.
Right. I mean, I, you know, Michelle Obama has her Let's Move campaign and is sort of setting a good example with the garden at the White House. But they are seen as such liberal elites that nobody's going to pay attention to that. If anything, I think that's going to backfire in a lot of ways and people are going to say, well, I'm not going to do that. There was an interesting article in the Times health section today about tooth decay in really young children. Did you see that? That, you know, these kids under the age of, you know, 3, 4 are coming in with, you know, multiple cavities needing root canal. And, you know, they said it's because A, parents are not being good parents and not brushing their kids' teeth. One of the women quoted said, well, I don't want to emotionally scar him by making him brush his teeth. Like, well, root canal is going to be, you
surgery's
know,
better
with general anesthesia. But one of the things that really struck me, of course, is they said it's because of the constant snacking. And we do live in a total grazing snacking nation now. I mean, when I was a kid, we didn't, you know, we had the one after school snack and that was it. Now it's like kids have these little feed bags. They're like, you know, they're like horses and they strap on their little feed bag and walk around with it all day, you know, and the sort of constant having to drink like the sippy cup juice box. But the one thing that really surprised me was, you know, they were talking about bottled water and that all these parents are convinced that, oh, you can't feed your kid tap water. You have to give them bottled water instead. It's better. It's cleaner. It's pure, but it has no fluoride.
Right.
You know, now, regardless of sort of where you feel about fluoride in water, because people have very mixed opinions about that, it has prevented us all from having terrible tooth decay for the last 50 years. And I thought that was fascinating that there's this now whole school of little kids coming in needing dental work at 4 and 5 because they've been drinking bottled water because Coca-Cola, who owns Dasani, has said, you know, this is what you need to be drinking.
Well, and something that actually wasn't mentioned in that article that I think is extremely relevant. There's a dentist, Weston A. Price, very famous dentist.
Oh, yeah.
And he found that traditional peoples living, you know, on a diet that they, you know, have been eating for thousands of years, not any processed foods, had very few, if any, cavities at all. And then once they introduced Western foods into their diets, they were riddled with cavities. And so, it's not, I mean, I do believe it's what you're saying. Also all the snacking, the starchy foods on the teeth, right. But I do think that, you know, your underlying nutrition manifests in your dental health, mm-hmm. and these children are not getting the nutrition their bodies need. Sure. They're eating, like you said, I mean, they're eating all this crappy food
and
they're
all not, day.
You know, all day long,
grazing,
tons of sugar, mm-hmm. tons of, horrible, you know, processed ingredients, and they're not getting like vegetables and, you know, mm-hmm. good quality proteins, sure. and all these things that kids need to grow and to have healthy teeth.
No, so. They're getting their vegetables because they all eat Pirate's Booty. They eat veggie puffs.
Right.
So that's those are vegetables.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah.
That's right.
That's green. That's okay. And little fruit gummies. That's
right.
Fruit, right?
Right.
Fruit gushers. Yeah.
Yeah.
Now I'm probably going to get sued because I'm not supposed to use product names. But anyway, I thought that was a really interesting article.
Yeah, it really is.
I remember actually reading years ago this article about India and how when Coca-Cola first came into India, it was the first time that they really started to see cavities. You know, people had other sort of age-related or poverty-related dental issues, but the kids all started to present with cavities. It also caused the tea commodity market to collapse when they brought Coke into India. Yeah, it's really insane. We're going to take a very quick break. When we come back, more with Kristen Wortman.
Little boxes on the hillside. Little boxes made of ticky-tacky. Little boxes on the hillside. Little boxes all the same.
The following program was sponsored by S. Wallace Edwards and Sons. Summertime is not the only time when barbecue is welcome. At S. Wallace Edwards and Sons, Sam Edwards has been working his magic on ribs, briskets, pit-cooked pulled pork, and much, much more. Add a few of their sides and the party is complete. Entertaining has never been so easy. To order, go to virginiatraditions.com.
And business executives, and they're all made out of ticky-tacky, and they all look just the same. And they all play on the golf course and drink their martinis dry, and they all have pretty children, and the children go to school.
Welcome back to Let's Get Real on Heritage Radio Network. I'm Erica Wise, your host, and we have Kristen Wortman from Occupy Big Food in the studio live with us tonight. Just want to remind you that on March 21st, the Heritage Radio Network is having a party to celebrate those of us who have done more than 100 episodes of their shows. And if you count up my two shows combined, I'm at 121. So I think I'm one of the top there. Unfortunately, I have to work that night and I can't come to the party. But you can look on the Heritage Radio website for info about that. Remember, you can always listen to any Heritage Radio Network show on heritageradionetwork.com. But you can also find them all on iTunes forever and ever. And if you're a fan of Let's Get Real, you can follow me on Twitter at Let's Get Real Show. You can also go on Facebook and find the Let's Get Real page, and you can leave comments and questions and talk to me and tell me what you think. And you can also visit my site, which is letsgetrealshow.com, and you can read my flog, which is my foodiness blog, on there. And it also has links to other media mentions and appearances, including the speech I made at Occupy Big Food, which is how I met Kristen, who is in the studio with us tonight. And so that event was great. I mean, it was freezing cold and we stood out there for a while, but that was a really great event. Are there other Occupy Big Food events in the works?
Yeah, Eric and I are planning some for the springtime. Mm-hmm. So those are in the works and we'll be making announcements about those coming up.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
And people can follow you on Twitter.
Twitter at Occupy Big Food. We also have a Facebook page, Occupy Big Food.
Great. So since we're talking foodiness and corporate and all of that horrible stuff, do you have any foodiness secret pleasures?
I really don't. I don't eat any of that food. I mean, maybe it's just the work I do. I'm always researching and seeing how horrible it is. So, I mean, I'm pretty adamant. Our household has none of those foods in it.
Yeah. You know what? Somebody asked me this, or I think when I had Mary Nessel on, I wanted to ask her that. And so I first thought about what mine were, and I don't have any.
Yeah. Well, if you know about it, if you really know about it.
You can't do it.
No.
Right.
I don't think so.
Once you've seen the dark side.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I don't. I couldn't think of any. Once in a while, I'll eat a Kind bar, but they're just like nuts and fruit. Like, they're okay.
They're okay.
Like, if I'm hiking.
They're okay.
They were the one that I found that I thought was okay. But, and there are these things called core bars that I actually read about on Grist.
Uh-huh.
And I wrote to them because I said I wanted to sort of see what they were actually all about. And they're really just made out of food. I mean, I'm not a great proponent of food in bar form, but those are actually really seriously just made out of food. And then they were really nice and sent me some and put me on their website. So
right.
If you have to eat a bar, eat a core bar. But yeah, I don't have any either. And it's really, you know, we didn't eat a lot of that stuff growing up, but we certainly had some. I mean, some was integrated into our diet, but I feel like I've exercised it all completely out of my diet. Cause same thing. It's like once you know, once you've seen behind the curtain, basically, and see it's just a man in a green suit, you know, operating. But a friend and business associate of mine still drinks Diet Sprite, and he knows who he is, and he needs to stop.
Well, he should read the article that was Tom Philpott wrote, Mother Jones, recently about the cancer.
And stroke.
Cancer, stroke, heart disease with diet
soda. Diet soda, I know. I mean, really. Actually, somebody I work with who's 38 had a massive stroke and brain hemorrhage about 6 months ago, and he drank diet soda all day, every day.
Diet soda also makes people gain weight and a lot of central fatness.
Yep, it has that like rebound kind of thing.
Yeah.
So, you know, of course I have to ask you this. So where do you see food in 20, 30, 50 years? What do you see the future of food in the U.S.?
It really depends on what we're willing to do, because if we continue on the track we're on now, it's very bleak as far as I can see. That's why we need to really get active and start demanding real changes and getting more people on board. I mean, otherwise, if we continue on this track, I mean, not only are these corporations going to completely dictate all of our food supply, because like right now, even organic crops that are soy, corn, sugar, they do have traces of GMO a lot of the time because they just simply cannot control it.
Right.
And there's so many of them. So they're already tainted at this point.
And it's still corn, soy.
Right.
You know, sugar, it just happens to be organic. It's like,
right. No, exactly.
You can have things like organic Coke. Not yet, but I'm sure it's coming. Right.
No, but the point is that, you know, we're headed down this path where there's not going to be much diversity at all.
Right.
And, you know, and also these food corporations are ruining our environment. I mean, the two go hand in hand. They're the biggest polluter of water in this country is industrial agriculture. So it's pretty dismal if we don't really make changes like right now,
right,
in the next couple of years.
Right. So we still can.
Yeah. And so I'm hoping that we can get this message out and we can really start to create change. And there seems to be a real groundswell of interest and concern, particularly over GMO crops in Monsanto. And I'm hoping that that's just the very tip of what people, when people will start to really understand how deeply these corporations control everything. And it's not just GMOs.
Yeah.
But if that's what it takes to get people really on board, that's what we need. So,
I mean, what can people do? I mean, what would be a good sort of direct action thing that someone could do?
Well, I mean, like you said, the number one thing is if you already are in the know, do not buy these foods. You know, you can go to our site, OccupyBigFoodNYC.com, and it tells you how to identify foods that are GMO or non-GMO. And there's a lot of good resources out there on that. So don't buy GMO foods. Don't try to limit the amount of packaged and processed foods you buy and cook at home. You know, these are the things people who are already sort of in the know can do.
Right.
And then I think it's our job as educators to help get everyone really on board with this and trying to get it out to everybody.
Or they can just listen to my show.
Listen to your show.
Yeah. This is what it's all about.
Yeah.
Let's get real. Yeah. I mean, when I sort of look at food in the future, I mean, I totally agree with you that we're really right. It's like we're right at the precipice. It's like the same thing with climate change. You know, if they say if we don't do it now, it's going to be too late.
We might already be too late on that one.
It might already be too late. That's true. You know that we've just, the USDA agricultural zone map, you know, like for gardening, you know that we just shifted a zone?
It shifted a zone.
We're in a warmer zone now.
Yeah.
Just in our lifetime.
Right.
That's crazy. I mean, there were daffodils blooming.
I know.
In February.
Yeah, early. I saw them in Prospect Park.
Yeah, me too.
I know. I was like, what the hell? Yeah.
No, go back in.
And this statistic that children born after 2000 may not exceed the lifetime of their parents. That's never happened before.
Right. Well, because they're all going to be obese and dying of diabetes.
And, you know, public health officials now are so concerned because they see in the next 20 to 30 years, you know, the burden of all these people that are going to have diabetes, it's going to be enormous. So, you know, we need to start, like, reversing this, like, immediately.
Yeah, well, it's good for big pharma. I mean, talk about big food. Big pharma is the one who's really set to make the profits, and they don't want people to change their bad habits because they want to keep medicating them. Yeah, right.
It's like Paula Deen from big food to big pharma.
Exactly. Although she did lose 2 pant sizes, that was in the news recently.
Oh, really?
Uh huh. She lost some weight, but I don't know if it's going to make that much of a difference. But I mean, I sort of see it, you know, the way politics in this country is becoming more and more and more and more divisive and splintered. I sort of see food that way. That almost like we have 3 different tiers. You know, we sort of have the people like us, you know, the sort of so-called liberal elite food media types who know or who care to know or do the work to know, or we know because it's what we do. And then there's the people who... you know, the foodiness crowd, like the people who think, oh, well, I'm doing the right thing. I'm buying my kid, you know, the organic gummy bear instead, or the organic Pop-Tart type thing, you know. And then there's the actual Pop-Tart crowd. Like I always say, there's food, there's junk food, and there's what's in between, which is foodiness. Yeah. And I sort of see it going that way. Like, we have this amazing food movement going on with organics and local and farming and artisanal and craft and all of this great stuff, you know. And then there's sort of everything else.
There's
Walmart, and then there's something in the between there, but I'm not really sure it is. I mean, you know, foodiness and food trends don't happen in a vacuum. You know, they happen within the context of the population, and you know, as the population becomes sort of more dependent and more disconnected by the day, sort of across the board, you know, via like devices and the internet and pharmaceuticals and, you know, every other way in which corporate America defines who we are and how we live. I mean, they really own us in so many ways. You know, so you can't sort of be like so profoundly disconnected in every facet of your life and then be independent and connected to your food, because it's all become so enmeshed and so intertwined. So it's like you have to sort of have this broader scope awareness of it all. And you know, people, I mean, unless you really are like us and you do the research and you've seen all the movies and read all the books, you don't understand how deeply it all goes. You know, that it all goes back to the Earl Butz and the Farm Bill and all that policy and corn syrup and sugar and commodity crops. And, you know, it spirals upwards till we wind up with where we are today. So any last words? Because we're out of time, but I want to let you get in a few more because I've been talking too much.
Visit OccupyBigFoodNYC.com and go to my blog, KristenWortman.com, to read more about all this important
And if there are any more Occupy Big Food events, we will be there.
Yes,
screaming
absolutely.
And yelling again, hopefully with a real mic this time instead of the human mic.
Although
the human mic actually worked out pretty well, because if you say something funny, then everybody has to repeat it.
Yeah.
So you get laughs twice.
Exactly.
It's kind of cool, which I like. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for coming on the
show.
Thank
you for
having
me.
It's been really great to talk to you. And we'll have you back some other time, and we'll talk to you then.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks.
Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening.